So we're here at Fringe Central, coming towards the last week of Edinburgh Fringe, and the second week of Fringe first were announced, so are we going into the third week? I'm not sure, but congratulations here
Thank you.
A piece called Transcripts, and I'm joined by...
Paul Lucas.
And Paul, why do you think it got a Fringe first?
I hope it got a Fringe first because it's a wonderful show. It's also a very, very timely subject, a very important subject, and the editors of the Scotsman, the arts critics, the reviewers on that committee tend to be very forward-thinking, intelligent people who understand the importance of a play like this, and I think they wanted to recognize a piece that is really on the frontier of exploring gender. And when I say it's on the frontier, I don't mean that in an egocentric way that I have somehow managed to create this thing out of whole cloth. It's a verbatim play. I have done 4 years of interviews with people of transgender experience all over the world, and I've taken those people's actual words in order to create this piece. So while you do have a number of high-profile people in the media right now, like Caitlyn Jenner, Laverne Fox, etc., who represent a certain strata of people of trans experience and a certain visibility, I made a real point to interview people all over the world, in smaller cities, in the U.S., the U.K., Australia, India, Cuba, Germany, many different places. And it's also not a fictionalized account. It's real stories of people living this experience, primarily people who have been living it for the last, 30 to 70 years. So there's a new generation now of so-called genderqueer people and people who are more gender transgressive, people who have had a different time. And I could have chosen to focus on that group because they're a very, very hot topic in some ways. But instead, I'm focusing on people who really have not gotten their due, people who have really been in the trenches dealing with this issue and dealing with society's reaction to their just trying to live their lives authentically. And I think that the committee saw that and wanted to honor that.
My background originally was as a social scientist, and I learned research method, particularly interview method. And one of the most inspiring things I heard was that one of the ways that you do that is that you need to be humble. That's kind of the role of the interviewer. And you're collecting data and stories and words of people who, when they speak to you, that's what's sacred to them. And then you end up with far more material than you can squeeze into a Fringe show. So what's the process of selection and distillation that you go through to decide what's in and what's out?
I want to go back to something you said quickly, which is it is both the humility and the desire to serve a community that is underserved. So being an ally means allowing people to speak for themselves, not to say, this is what I've learned and here it is. So my responsibility when I am editing material is to try to retain the breadth of the experiences that I heard, yet try to find a cohesive way to put the material together. I worked with a dramaturg in New York City named Morgan Jeunesse, who's fantastic, just won a major award in New York City for her dramaturgy work. And what we decided to do was to take these six main characters and treat them as though they were one soul going on the hero's journey. So we took that Joseph Campbell idea of the real world and the call to adventure and the refusal of the call and all those different stages of the hero's journey and brought these characters along that journey. And so those stories of what it was like to be a child, what it was like when they first knew something was different, how they tried to ignore it, how they then had no other choice but to leap over into their adventure, into their change, into their growth, into their authentic self. Those things began to emerge. And so the details were... We try to keep in interesting details and unique stories, but we also allowed the material to be shaped by that age-old structure that people understand intuitively, even if they don't know they understand it.
And as a theatre maker, was intuition something that would help you decide, look, we've got five very powerful stories here and we've only got room for one and it's going to be that one? What were the criteria? Because at one point you've got theatre and an audience meeting that and the need to have a show, and the other side is truth and the need to tell a story, and they don't always meet, do they?
No, they don't. And so there are wonderful, wonderful stories that are not in this piece. I envision Transcripts the play, this is actually Transgress Part 1, The Women, because I'm planning on doing The Men next, is only a part of a larger project, and that larger project will include, first of all, Q&As and talkbacks after all the shows, during which people can learn more based on their own questions and based on what I want to share with them. And that will be facilitated ideally by a person of trans experience. But I think I would also like to have a supplementary website. People can actually click on buttons and to hear a story about this, click here. To hear a story about that, click there. There's also things like Amazon Singles, which is a newish thing that Amazon does, where you just do these short 1,500, 3,000 word pieces and I can sell them individually as individual stories, and you're spending 5 minutes, 10 minutes on an individual podcast,
right.
You know. And I would also like to eventually allow people to share their own stories on my website as well. But it's a big, big, big project, and I'm only at the beginning stages of it.
I also love the phrase that overlaps with the word play, which is playing in. And from what I'm hearing is what we see before us. There's a whole load of other material that's playing into it, even though we don't see or hear it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I often say about this piece that I interviewed 75 people. Only 6 of their stories show up literally in the play, but the other interviews informed everything about the process. They informed me and I'm learning how to ask better questions. I learned questions that I thought were really smart and insightful were sort of stupid. As I went on with the process, one of the monologues in the piece that is lifted from another character and put upon one of the 6 main characters, there are only 3 monologues in the piece that are that way, is a response to a question I asked many, many interview subjects, which was, is there another way of expressing it, a succinct way of expressing your experience other than being trapped in the wrong body? And what the person said to me, and this is 60, 70 interviews in, was, no, there is no pithy 3-line explanation, no simple narrative that we can all buy into. There are hundreds, there are thousands, there are tens of thousands, there are hundreds of thousands of stories, and I don't think I should have to share a narrative with anybody else. I am Tatiana. No one else is Tatiana. And that I'm trying to remember exactly the way you asked the question. But
So what we're saying is everybody's story is unique, and you've had to include stuff. But there's a whole population of stories that we're not going to hear that are part of what we do
exactly.
See.
Exactly, and part of what as I said informed my entire process. So even if people's stories are not in the piece, I would include certain material because I heard that so many times that I needed to throw reference into the use of bathrooms, for instance. Bathroom use is a huge, huge issue in the trans community. You can be killed or beaten up or thrown out of a bathroom for being transgender. So I can't do a piece on being trans without at least mentioning that. So if themes recurred, I needed to find someone's material that I was focusing on that at least honored other materials, other material, even if the other people said it better, at least I'm acknowledging it.
And as an artist with a clutch of stars and awards, are you still then left feeling a bit unsatisfied and restless because of the nature of this? Or can you get to a point as a theatre maker where you can go, well, yeah, we've reached the end of this bit and this feels done now and this feels right?
Right. I've been thinking about that a lot. I've been thinking about the fact that visual artists very often struggle with knowing when a painting is done. And that has resonated with me because I'm actually, although I've been a producer for 20 years, this is my first play as a playwright. And so it's a very vulnerable and new experience for me. And no, I don't feel like it's done at this point. I feel like part of it is done, but I am very much in the throes right now of wrestling with that idea of how do I want to change it? How do I want to expand it? This is the Edinburgh length show. How much more can it hold? Can I throw 15 minutes back in without it being too long for audiences? Can I not? I don't know the answer to that question. And I think it will also change with different cast members. Certain cast members bring things with them and others don't. And certain cast members might not really represent aspects of a character that are very important, but I might not have in a particular production because I just don't have the right match between... And in this case, of course, I'm dealing with the fact that whenever possible, I'm using trans actors as well. And their experiences can be very, very different from the character they're playing, and that can be hard for them sometimes because the character is saying things that they find to be ugly or they find offensive, and they have to say it anyway.
And in a world now where, very paradoxically, at one level, people are celebrating the ability to marry whoever they want, to express publicly more than ever the pride in who they are, we've also got countries where people are imprisoned, even executed and tortured. So does verbatim theatre, direct witness, have something important and unique to offer that there in a way that, say, traditional imagined fictional theatre can't quite reach? Or, what's the specific role of that right now?
I think it very much can, because you want to feel as though you are getting the real words and the real lived experience of people instead of the imagined idea of it. And in the case of this play, these are people who I asked questions that people are afraid to ask. When I started this project, I had two transgender friends. They weren't very close friends. They were friends. And I realized that even though I'm somebody who is very verbal and who's very practically, I ask questions of my friends and I discuss. Everything is fair game with me. In either direction. People want to ask me any question at any point, I'll answer that question for the most part. And I realized with my trans friends, I had so little context for their experience that I wasn't as direct with them as I would be with my other friends. So I then got over that and I began to ask questions for this project, which gave me permission to ask things I wouldn't have asked them as just trans friends of mine. And so this allows the audience to get answers to questions they're really afraid or embarrassed to ask. And in the case of doing it in Edinburgh, their audience members are often sitting as close as you are sitting to me right now. And they've never knowingly seen a trans person. And here, four or more of them, of trans people, are in front of them and at some point touching them. And it's a new experience for people.
That leads me nicely to a final question, which is, I guess it's a personal one. So here at the Edinburgh Fringe, sitting in the audience or sitting near the audience with this piece occurring and feeling and maybe even witnessing their reaction to it, what's going on inside you?
I get very emotional because I feel a huge sense of responsibility to the people who spoke to me. They spoke to me openly. They were almost always strangers. I had met them 5 minutes before and they opened up their entire lives to me. And so I feel very responsible to serve their stories. And when their stories educate, enlighten, buoy, entertain people, it really makes a huge difference. And I and all of my cast have met people who have thanked us, who have cried, who have said that they understood someone in their life they didn't understand before. I had a woman who I just flyered. She didn't even come to my show. And she sought me out later and she said, "Do you see that little girl in the blue dress? That's my son. Thank you for what you're doing. Bless you." So I feel good about that.
Paul Lucas, winner of a Fringe First for Transcripts. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.